This week on the BOAG World Show, we ask, how can we make the decision to act feel as effortless as possible for users? This week's show is sponsored by Balsamic and .tech domains. Hello and welcome to the BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG and joining me, as always, on this week's show is Marcus Lillington.
And the room. How many people in the room this week? It must be more than last week.
Thousands. We have increased in numbers.
Yay!
We've got a massive total of, I was about to say 26 people listening, and it immediately then went down to 25.
Yeah, I am not a number.
Although, to be quite honest, after the start that we had trying to get it up and running today, I don't blame them.
Do you know, what do you want to know? The answer is yes, by the way, Paul. Do you want to know why I didn't have my headphone adapter? And why it set you all off in a bad place and that nothing worked after that. Do you want to know why?
Right, go on then.
I got myself a new toy in this last week that I've been talking about for about 10 years. And I had to take the headphone adapter off at home to put it into this little amp thing I've got. Anyway, boring. I've got a pedal steel guitar.
Nobody cares
what that is, do you? You don't know what that is.
I do know what it is.
Really?
Because you've been going on about it for 10 years.
Oh, right. Okay. Anyway, I've got one.
So
how lovely.
No.
Although it's very hard.
Is that the one with extra strings or something?
Extra strings and pedals, and you sit down to it and you sort of play it. It's like a table.
Yes, that was it. Yeah. Yes. I knew you'd bored me with it.
Very hard.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh my God, what have I done? It's like I've spent thousands of pounds on something I can't play.
Yes. Well, you'll get there eventually.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to be dead in 10 years, Paul.
Bloody hell! How young are you? Is there something you want to tell us, Marcus?
That made you look up.
Has there been some kind of, you know, have you been to the doctors? Is this a kind of last hurrah before you check out?
No, it was after last week's little chat that I had about sort of everyone's falling apart around me. It's like, well, it's going to happen to me, isn't it? I played a guitar many times with a beer bottle, but not a pedal steel.
What do you mean beer bottle? What are you going on about now? How does that tie into anything?
You're answering things
from the chat room. Stop it.
You told me that was my job.
But you can't just refer to things in the chat room without explaining them, A, to me, and to the B, to the listeners who are listening later.
To the B, to the C.
You can't just go off on one like that. Drag it back. Perhaps we should just stop putting this out as a podcast and just do it as a live ramble.
It's okay. It's just one comment, Paul. Come on.
You know that the people in the chat room are just there to harass us and ruin the show. And by us, I mean me, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway.
New toy.
Yes. Ooh. No, that's really good. I've been playing with a new toy as well. Mine's a bit more on theme for the podcast because I've been playing with InVision Studio.
Have you come across
that?
I have. I've used InVision probably about a year ago. Not used it since.
Well, no, it's not something you would necessarily. Yeah, I know. It's very easy. But no, InVision Studio basically allows you to kind of it's a desktop app for a start.
Yeah.
And it allows you to join up your different screens and animate between them and introduce a bit of kind of animation and scrolling and you know, all of those kinds of stuff. But it's really, really, really easy to use. It's an absolute pleasure. It reminds me very much of Principal, I think it is, for the Mac, which does a very similar thing. So, yeah, it's brilliant. I've really enjoyed playing with that.
Paul?
No, it's free.
For only for a select few, I'm guessing.
No. It's kind of, no. Seriously, it's open for all. It's because they want you to sign up for InVision proper, and it integrates in with InVision. So they actually give InVision Studio away for free.
Cool.
Which I was kind of gobsmacked at. I don't understand why they're doing that. It seems ridiculous, but they are. So let's not question it. It's like they give away this Craft plugin, which is one of the best plugins for Sketch around. Mm. Someone in the chat room, Andrew in the chat room, is asking whether I like Adobe XD or Experience or whatever the hell it's called. I had a little play with it when it was in beta, but I haven't really used it much since. I mean, these things are all pretty much kind of similar to one another, aren't they, really? They're all pretty good. I quite like them all. But this one, because it was free.
You know, you get these kind of things that you can build. If you're not a website, you know, a skilled website builder person, you can buy these things that can create, like, one-page scrolling websites with big pictures. Adobe do a really good one of those called Spark, I think it's called. I was very impressed with. So they do Spark some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm not. It's not having a go. I'm not being anti.
Adobe at all, don't they?
Yeah, although I think that's beginning to pass a little bit. They're changing and becoming much more engaged with the community again, and they're listening to people. And I think people didn't like it when they went to a subscription based model, but so many things have done that now that you kind of can't pick just on Adobe on that.
Yeah.
And then also they're now creating some really good tools that are aimed specifically. You know, before they had a lot of kind of graphic design tools that were being crowbarred into being web tools. But now they kind of have overcome that a lot more.
Okay.
So Adobe Experience, does that do like animations and transitions and that kind of stuff? I'm not asking you, Mark, because obviously I'm asking room at that.
Yeah.
because I know there are a lot of great tools out there that do that, but I didn't know that Adobe Experience did that. I thought it was just a kind of equivalent of Sketch. And that was the other thing I really liked about InVision Studios. You can just import Sketch files in if you prefer working in Sketch, which I do. Oh, okay, so it does do a bit of basic interaction. Oh, that's interesting. That's Adobe Experience does that. But I'm not looking at the chat room. So
failing miserably. How long have we been in? Oh, actually, 11 minutes. Doesn't time fly when you're having
11 minutes, but we have... Well, at least we are actually talking about web design related stuff.
True.
Which is true. But unlike in the BOAG World Slack channel, where we seem to be mainly discussing superhero powers. Did you miss that conversation?
I looked at it and thought, I'm far too grown up for that kind of silliness.
Oh, bullshit. You must know, everybody knows what superpower they would have, Marcus. What superpower would you have? Come on.
I think somebody said it earlier on. It's either, transporter or time travel, that sort of thing.
Yeah, teleportation is the one I'd like.
That's the one. Yeah, that one. I'd like to go home now. Boom. That would be great.
Yes. Well, that's the difference between you and me, right? You are such a homeboy. I want to go home now. Boom. Me, I want to go to the Maldives now. Boom. I want to go to Australia now. Boom. China, South America, you know. Bit different.
Mars.
Yeah, the problem with that is you would die.
You'd have to have a suit on.
Yeah, but where am I going to get a spacesuit from? I suppose you could. I wonder whether you could get away with wearing scuba diving gear.
Probably. I don't know. You might freeze to death.
Yeah, your face would freeze, wouldn't it? Or something like that.
I'm sure you could find out. There's that thing called the internet.
Victor has solved the problem. First of all, you teleport into NASA and steal their spacesuits. Yeah. I'm not sure that is particularly ethical in our imaginary make-believe world where I have a superpower. Anyway, none of that is relevant. There was something else I was going to talk about. I can't remember what. Oh, I know. You know, I went on a little rant when somebody accused me of saying really too much.
Yes.
It was the wrong word. I say right too much.
Right.
And I do that. I know I do that.
Yeah.
I tend to start new thoughts with right. So there we go.
It's not that bad.
67 times in that one episode.
So?
But apparently in the last episode it was only 10 times, so it's better.
Right.
Don't.
I prefer really, because really can be used in two different ways. But anyway, there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, Marcus, thought for the day. Headscape site redesign part two.
Yeah.
You're really going to spring this out, aren't you?
This is the exciting bit, yeah. I'm wondering how many I can get to. That can be my challenge for the series.
You'll be talking about doing a whole thought for the day on a particular icon that was used on one page. Yeah.
Now, this is kind of relevant, and I do pull two things into this, sort of. Basically, it's about copy. Last week, I talked a lot about how we've made our content less chatty. I actually said less friendly,
which
brought in a few laughs. Didn't mean that. I just meant less chatty, less kind of chummy. So I thought it'd be good to provide a few examples of that. What do I mean?
Yes, Marcus, what do you mean?
What do I mean? So this is what I mean. I found a few examples from the old site. Oh, by the way, the new Headscape site is now live today.
Oh, is it?
Yes, you can go and have a look. Headscape.co.uk.
Nearly did the same. You nearly said the same, got your own name of your own company wrong. You nearly did what everybody else does and call it Headspace, that meditation app. That's so funny.
Yeah, so...
It means me.
Anyway, the 404 page.
When are you gonna update the site so it's not got the wireframe on and actually put the rest of the design in?
You're so funny, Paul.
I know. Sorry, carry on.
So a few examples of what I mean by making the content less chatty. Our old 404 page read, "Oh no, the page is missing!" Exclamation mark. That's a bit embarrassing. A digital agency that loses a page. Apologies. We will look into the problem and see if we can fix it. In the meantime, you might want to try any of the following. List links to the homepage, but things like give me a shout on Twitter. The first thing I need to say is the second of those lines, we will look into the problem and see if we can fix it. Total lie. I mean, how are you ever going to know?
Well, it wasn't a lie when we wrote it, right? I thought naively that somebody would be monitoring our 404 errors and would look at fixing them. How dumb I was!
You get 404s if somebody types the wrong URL. That's not our problem to fix, is it?
Yeah, I know, but you can see why when there's been broke. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah?
Yeah, right.
I would. Okay. Lying. B, we were talking twaddle.
People in the chat room are saying they like the new design. It's terrible. I mean, really, it's such a step back. Where's the rest of it? It's like...
Minimalist, Where's
the drop shadows and rounded corners?
Yeah, there aren't enough beverly buttons.
We need
more beverly buttons. But let me finish this particular example.
Sorry.
The new 404 page reads as follows. Page not found. Please try any of the following. And then some links. Very clear.
That really... Yes.
Spot on. I do agree. Clear. You can argue it's not very friendly. But you can also argue that, do you want to be sort of chatty and chummy on a 404 page? Actually, you just want to guide people, which is what we're doing.
Yes, and I do agree with that. I do agree that it's not the time to be jokey and having fun. And I am embarrassed with what was, let's be honest, my copy for that page previously.
I think we can share that responsibility, Paul.
Oh, can we?
Oh, okay. Yes, definitely. As with the next couple. So... we had an old page intro it was our contact page. Sorry, I typed the wrong word. A contact page had an intro that read as follows. If you are interested in hiring Headscape, we would love to hear from you. I mean, firstly, I'd say that's rather pushy. What if I don't know if I want to hire you? I might just like to have a little chat.
We don't want to hear from them. I think that's blatantly clear. Piss off. Basically,
well, you could argue that, but it's possible that somebody doesn't know yet, but they'd like to talk to you about whether...
No, you're right.
So, anyway, the new page intro reads nothing at all. Doesn't need anything. The old stuff is all happy talk.
And that is the key, what you've just said there, right? Mm. It's all happy talk. All of that stuff, it does depend. This is a stylistic choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I take it you're not saying that it would be bad to have some humour or some fun or
absolutely
something in it.
Not. No, it just It just doesn't fit. As I went on blurbed along for ages last week's show about sort of how our brand's changed. I think it might have been the week before. It's changed to this kind of less chatty, less kind of friendly, young kind of thing that we were 10 plus years ago. And just trying to reflect that. And yeah, maybe it is a little bit less friendly, but basically we're just trying to be clear and simple because we're simple. One more then. Our old team page had the intro. Creating something successful requires specialists from lots of different fields. Headscape is made up of expert designers, developers, and strategists. That said, we can't do it by ourselves. We believe in building websites together with our clients. So if you choose to work with us, expect to roll up your sleeves and get involved. You will be contributing from start to finish. New site, guess what?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. Because I think it's, you know, if you just look at our case studies, it's fair to say that we're experts, or just how long we've been around doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And all the stuff about rolling up your sleeves could be taken the wrong way. It's, in my view, or in our view, it's unnecessary blurbage. So, yeah, just really kind of honing it down. So that was two quite long paragraphs that have just gone completely. And the final point, which isn't actually about examples of that, it's just another content-related thing, is this was when we were reviewing the case studies. Be careful about dating your content, particularly case studies. Because when you're writing a case study, a new one, you're normally excited about this new project that's just gone live. I found words like, or phrases like, recently, and we've just launched, and during 2012, or 2006, I found on one of them. You know, obviously these instantly date stuff, and don't do it. So just consider that when you're writing case studies.
But Marcus, the very first case study I opened says, in early 2017, we interviewed a number of Zuckerman attorneys.
Right, and that's what I missed. Thanks, Paul.
There you go.
Can you do the rest of the site while you're there?
No, I see where you're going, and I totally get it. I don't know whether I would agree with it for every site, but you know, with the kind of work that Headscape does, spot on, makes a lot of sense. You're very usability focused. You're not a branding agency, you're not a marketing agency, you're not even copywriters, you know. So so I think it's absolutely spot on. Clean, usable design, don't you?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and lots of research and stuff like that as well. But yeah, that's it. Thoughts for this week, copy and the changes to copy. And something else about the Headscape site, no doubt, next week.
Now, somebody else, you've got a clue for next week of what you can talk about. Peter said, very interested in your information architecture and why team is ahead of services. So you could talk about information architecture.
What does my note, that what gives my you, notes say? My next one.
You haven't planned ahead.
Yes, I have. Well, just the title. Changing the nav and reduced page numbers. And changing the nav
there
is obviously
go.
A change to information architecture. So, yes, I will be talking about that probably next week.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's talk about our first sponsor for this show. It's a new one this week.
Ooh.
Full Story have been forced out. It was so funny. When they came to sign up with me, I said, I can't offer you a whole season because we had a couple of other, other sponsors in the mix as well, which is quite nice, I think, to have a bit of a mix. So, no, it's not Envision Studio, says Victor in the... That was unpaid. That's terrible, isn't it? No, it's .tech domains. We're going to talk about domain names. and how finding a domain name absolutely sucks. Either the well-known ones are already gone, or you end up with a domain that just doesn't really fit what it is you offer. I mean, I don't get this, right? Why is it that so many tech companies, tech startups, seem to have domains? I mean, like the one we're on right now, right? Right, we're broadcasting this via Crowdcast. That has the domain crowdcast.io. Why I-O? Other than it's
input,
short.
Input, output. Yeah, that's what I've always thought it meant. Why, yeah, though? It's, why?
It's shit. It's terrible. So anyway, why don't you go with something more relevant like a .tech domain? So they've got loads of availability because it's a new domain name. So it'd be great if you're, say, a developer and you want to create a personal brand name. You know, you're going to find those much easier to get on the .tech domain. Also, it means you don't have to compromise on the domain name you end up picking. So for example, if you want to pick name X name of the company, you know, if you want to be rename Headscape, Headspace, and have done with it, then you'll know that the .tech domain will be available because it's new, so you can have that quality domain that you really want. And also, obviously, it's very relevant if you're in the tech industry because it's going to be intuitive, it's going to be descriptive, people are going to remember it easy because, well, you're a tech company, therefore a tech domain makes sense. You can also, of course, do some imaginative stuff when you've got a word as a domain name. So you could have breakinto.tech, right, as a descriptive name of the business. Or you could have extreme.tech. Okay, that might not have been...
I want that.
Extreme tech! Yeah! Oh, God. A shame. But it means that you can do some good brand positioning type stuff. So, because it's a new domain name and they're trying to encourage people to do it, they've got this incredible deal which makes it silly not to get a .tech domain. If you use the code BOAG when you check out on the URL I'm about to give you, you'll get 90% off of a 1 or 5 year registration. So for 1 year, it means it's to get a .tech domain is going to cost $4.99. Even Marcus can afford that.
Not after my purchase last week.
Not after your...
No chance.
No, is that too much?
Yeah.
So 5 years at $24.99 really would be, you know, that would just break the bank entirely.
No chance.
Yeah, that's a shame.
I want extreme.tech as well.
What on earth? What on earth would you put on an extreme.tech
domain?
You
know what I won't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I haven't been involved in buying a domain name for getting on for 20 years.
I don't suppose you have people for that.
Yeah, people. No, we've had no reason to. I just don't have any other websites apart from Headscape. That's not totally true. We've done kind of things like Headscape Higher Ed and things like that. You know, kind of specific ones, subdomains, if you like, to the Headscape one. But I haven't thought, right, I need a name for this new business or whatever. So I haven't done it, and it's a bit like I'm just about to reach 29 years married. I've got no idea what it would be like to be playing the field. So I was making that comparison between...
Well, that is a very peculiar comparison to make.
It's peculiar, but it's true. It's kind of like I've got no idea about that or that.
It's okay, it's very easy. You go to... This isn't for playing the field, by the way.
You give them a pint of cider outside the farm gate.
No, you go to boag.world /tech... And follow the instructions.
Okay.
It's not difficult, all right? You'll be fine.
And before we move on to the next thing, I'm going to answer Peter's question now, because I might forget next week. There is a reason why team is ahead of services, and it is quite simply, we think that people think. Yeah, well, yeah, okay, we haven't tested this, but it's other than amongst ourselves.
So hang on a minute. So what is it you do? Usability and user research and that kind of stuff, but you haven't tested your own website. The hypocrisy of that.
We use our own expert judgment, Paul. Okay? Mm-hmm. But basically, we think that ordering something in who we are, what we do, makes more of a logical step. There's nothing more. There's no more thinking behind it than that. So that's why team is ahead of services.
And to be honest, most people that go to your website already know what you're going to, what you do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You know, you're a web design and development agency. They're going to see that from the homepage. Oh, I wonder what they might do. You know?
Yeah.
While it's the people
painting
that,
and decorating.
That kind of, yeah. It's the people that make the difference, isn't it?
Anyway, yes, Paul, right. I'll let you talk.
Yes. So today, this week, we're going to be talking about how to make the choices that people have to make on our websites feel easier and more effortless. And we're going to start with choice paralysis, which is a huge deal for many users on many websites, especially e-commerce sites. But it's also a problem even with things like, so it, the obvious ones is you've got a lot of different products. How do I pick which product I want to? So if you're on Amazon or a big e-commerce retailer, that's a problem.
Yes, 57 pages of this.
Exactly. Oh.
Yeah.
But even if you don't offer many products, you can still find your users suffering from choice paralysis because of things like navigation, right? Too many items in navigation to try and work out which one they want to select. Or you can have even down to like product categorization. If you maybe have a lot of stuff categorized in a lot of different areas, it's a problem. It's a problem for me on my blog because I've got 13 years worth of blog posts. And you might find, you know, half a dozen on a very similar subject to one another. So choice paralysis is a big thing. It's also a real thing. So what I mean by that is it's something that a lot of clients kind of go, oh, well, it's not that important. But it really is. And you can prove it using something called Hick's Law, right? If you do a Wikipedia search on Hick's Law, you'll come up with it very quickly. And I'll probably put a thing in the show notes if I can be asked to go to Wikipedia. And essentially, there is a predictable relationship between the number of options, right, that you present a user and the time it's going to take them to make a selection between those various options. It's kind of fairly obvious, but it is, you know, it's very much worth emphasizing, especially when you've got to prove it to a client, right? Oh, look at that. Michelle's done the link for me, so I don't have to make the effort. Oh. Not that I'm looking at the chat window. Yeah, seeing it's thrown me.
That threw you, didn't
so,
it?
Yeah, so we've got Hick's Law that kind of proves it. But if you need a kind of a more tangible example, obviously the very famous example is the jam example, right? So this is about exactly.
Yeah.
So a group of researchers decided to do a research project in a grocery store in California. And on some days, they had a stall set up which sold 6 varieties of jams, right? And on other days, they had a stall set up which sold 24 varieties of jam, right? On the days when they sold 24 varieties of jam, they saw a conversion rate of about 4%, okay? When they limited that number to only 6 varieties of jams, that jumped to 31%. In conversion rate. That is how big a deal choice paralysis can be, all right? But choice paralysis is a little bit more complicated than it first appears, right? There's a couple of additional things to say about it. First of all, Hick's Law doesn't take into account...
Sorry, Kat spent 5 minutes in the jam aisle in Tesco's yesterday.
There
cool.
See,
my question is, but what about if 6 is too many? You know, what if you actually should only be sort of providing, what's the optimal number of choices, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
I don't think it does. You don't know. You would have to test and see. So what happens, you know, in that research test, they took 2 fairly extreme points. Ben is now saying it's a very sticky situation. Mm. That is terrible, Ben. That is terrible. So it kind of depends on the extremes, doesn't it? You know, you would have to. How do I get rid
you
of
just
the
don't
chat?
Look at it. It's my job to look at it, not you.
I'm putting my hand over it. I'll put the microphone in front of it. There we go. I'm going to sit exactly here so I cannot see now.
They'll
just write rude things about me. That's the trouble.
It's all so. Yes, they're loving you to bits, Paul.
I'm sure they are. So yeah, you would just test with a smaller number. What if you tried 4? What if we tried 8, etc.? But what Hick's law doesn't take into account is that on a website in particular, people just reach a point of, yes, it's taking them longer to make a decision, so they get to a point where they just give up entirely and walk away. That's what the grocery store example shows.
Yeah.
Right? So you can't rely on people to keep persevering to the point where they will make a decision. But the other little complexity in here is about making those choices distinct from one another, right? So it's okay to have more choices if those choices are very, very obviously distinct from one another, okay? So let me give you an example. Well, I'll give you an example of how even choosing between two options can be a problem, right? So if you take the example of Wikipedia, that for years, Wikipedia used to have a search box on it. I think I told this story recently. I can't remember what I say where.
Sorry, I'm just reading about marmalade now. I can't believe you don't like marmalade. It's one of the most
Somebody
amazing things
like
on the planet.
Actually, what am I talking about? I don't really like marmalade very much.
Language.
I don't like. See, marmalade is kind of orangey, lemony, citrusy, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's quite
yeah.
A
super
sharp.
Power.
Yeah. Okay. I'm giving up.
More visual humour, please, especially for the podcast. I'm actually interested in this, Paul. Vaguely. Come on, get on with it.
Okay. So Wikipedia used to have two a search box, and beside that search box, it had two buttons. It had a go button and a search button.
Yes, and people can be, what do we do? Ah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even two choices can cause a problem if they're very, very similar. So it's like when Apple when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, they had this enormous range of products, and nobody quite knew which product to go for. So the first thing Steve Jobs did was create that quadrant of, you know, pro consumer, laptop, desktop, and he had one product in each, very distinct, very obvious choices, which is it's loads clearer. People know where they stand. You can also, of course, this is all well and good, but you don't actually always have the ability to, control the number of options. You know, as web designers, we only have limited power, and we can't suddenly turn around to a client and say you have to dump half your products, you know? So there are a couple of things that you can do to help deal with it. One is that you can break things down into stages. So if someone's making a complex decision, like buying a television, right, where, you know, do you go for an OLED screen or LCD? How big a screen do you need? You know, what does it need to be a smart TV? All of these kinds of different things. You can actually guide people through that choice by breaking it down into a series of stages. Equally with categories, you're almost better having a smaller number of top level categories and then having subcategories under it, which is effectively guiding someone to the point of the decision. And then the other thing you can do is chunk stuff. So you can basically show things in groups, right? Like on your credit card. If you look at your credit card, the number is split into 4 sets of 4 because it's easier for us to process that limited amount of information in one go.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you can also hide things. So if you take like navigation, let's say you've got 20 different categories of products, you can choose to just show the top 4 categories of products, the best sellers, which probably accounts for something like 80% of your sales anyway, and then hide the remaining categories under a more link or something like that. All right, so all these kinds of things work really well. The other thing that you can do is you can encourage people to make faster decisions. Because this is a weird one when it comes to choice paralysis. The longer that we have to think about our decision, the more hesitant we become about that decision, the less likely we are to be happy with the decision that we've made. And so we tend to get stuck. And, you know, we all have had that feeling, haven't we, of like, you've kind of overthought it and you end up being not happy with the decision you make because you've thought about it too much.
There was probably there was no decision you would be happy with in that situation.
Yeah, because you thought about it for too long. Yeah. So we can encourage people to make faster decisions. Now, there are manipulative ways that we can do that, but like limited time only. But better ways of doing it that don't make people feel manipulated is things like, you know, making the price a no-brainer or offering a really good return policy or indeed anything that removes the risk from the decision. Because then you can just make a decision and if you know, it's not the end of the world if you make a wrong one. All right. Mm. The final thing you can do is make the decision for people or at least kind of start them down that road. So this is where good defaults come in. So for example, you know, do things like make sure that, you know, let's say you were going on to a travel site again. I was bad mouthing travel sites last time. Now I'm going to bad mouth them again. Right, so you could go to a travel site.
They are.
Yeah, exactly. You go to a travel site, you have to say how many people are going to fly. Well, don't force people to fill that in. Fill it in with a value. You know, if you know 80% of the people that fly with you, there's two people, then put two people in by default. You know, even with date ranges, you could go, well, most people book 2 months in advance, so we'll and fly for a week, so we'll put that in as the default and people can change that if they want. So there are all kinds of ways of kind of removing decisions from people, or at least recommending things like, you know, putting the best selling product in each category up front on the homepage. Right, Amazon do this, don't they? They have Amazon's choice when you search on a particular thing, you know, which who knows what that algorithm's based on, but at least they're giving you some kind of guidance if you don't know or don't care, you know? You look like you were going to say something, Marcus.
No, I was just saying I was blind. I am blind to their recommendations, Amazon's recommendations. I don't see them at all. I don't even look at them. I go straight to the thing below.
Lies.
No, not lies.
Lies.
No, they Amazon, if you want to know, you can consider me a user tester. You could get rid of that based on one person.
Yeah, but but here's the thing, is you think you do, but statistically you don't.
No, Paul, that's true.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you. You live in your little fantasy world, that's fine by me. So there you go. There's a little bit about dealing with choice paralysis. Just to recap that for you, it's make your choices distinct, reduce the number of choices you're showing at user any one time, break it down into stages or chunks, encourage fast decisions, make good recommendations and set good defaults.
I thought of a thing when it did persuade me. They put up some orange gin with, you know, made with Seville oranges. And I bought that. I didn't know I wanted to buy it, but the fact that it came up at the top made me go, oh, I'll have that one instead of whatever I was looking for. So you're right.
And it is very different. You know, when you go in and you know specifically what you want, it's fine. You're not going to suffer from choice paralysis in those kinds of situations. It's when you don't know what you want that you've got a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk about our second sponsor of the day, which is obviously Balsamic. Earlier I was talking about Envision, wasn't I? And how much I really enjoy using Envision. Amazingly powerful tool that I found incredibly easy to pick up and start working with. But it's not something you would want to hand to a client and say, here, mock up your ideas in this. Easy though I found it, I don't think a client would, you know, because it doesn't work in that kind of way. Also, something like Envision, that's for high fidelity prototypes, you know, dealing with animation and transitions and that kind of stuff. It's not for exploring quick and dirty ideas with stakeholders. And that is what Balsamic is for. So if you want something where you can just sit in a meeting, brainstorm some stuff with a client, or hand it to a client and say, show me what it is that you've got in your head, then Balsamic is the way to go. You can get a 30-day free trial. And also, after your 30 days, you can get 3 months for free of their Balsamic Cloud product if you use the code BOAGWORLD alongside entering your billing information after you get a free account. So try out for 30 days. If you think you like it, sign up. But you won't have to pay for 3 months because you can use the code BOAGWORLD. And you can get that by going to balsamic.cloud. I think that about covers that.
Cool.
Right.
What's next, so Paul?
So we've talked about choice paralysis, but the other thing that helps people make a decision, now this is going to be quite an interesting one, is about how to make things feel easy, right? Now, we often talk about how to make things actually be easy.
Okay.
But there is another element here, which is how you make things feel easy. They're two slightly different things. And this is maybe where I would challenge a little bit the route that you've gone down with the Headscape site, right?
Okay.
Now, in actual, this is a fine line to walk, actually, and I don't think you've got a problem here, and I'll explain why. For me, we want to make things feel easy and intuitive. Well, I think we're all agreed on that,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, one of the things that reduces cognitive load, which is the primary reason why things feel hard, okay, is the mood we're in, okay? And our mood...
Oh, you were in a mood earlier this week, weren't you, Paul?
I was, actually, yes. I was having a stroppy moment.
What was that all about, then?
I don't know. So don't you? Well, you don't... Yeah, you've got no emotional range, have you, Marcus? You just kind of plod along happily in the middle.
All the time.
You're an unnatural freak of nature, Marcus, and I've got no time for you.
It's mind over matter, Paul. That's all it is.
It's not mind over matter. You just are naturally, irritatingly level-headed and balanced. And you are not representative of humanity as a whole. Most people have bad days.
Do they?
Yes. Oh. See, the chat room agrees with me. Nobody's posted anything
at all in there. Nothing.
Nobody on the audio knows that. So,
sorry, yes. Your mood affects how you use a website.
Yes, absolutely. So if you're in a bad mood, you're stroppy as hell at a website, you're more irritable, you give it less time, you give it less attention, it's bad, correct?
Oh dear. No comment there, is there? Aww.
Kat has just posted to the chat room, she's scared that I will get snippy with her again, mm-hmm. or with everybody again. It is true, I did threaten to ban a large number of people
you did.
From the Slack channel when I had a bad day. But that's what happens if you join a dictatorship. You know, your choice to join the Slack channel, and I've always made it very clear, my rules or the highway. No, that's not it. My way or the highway. Oh, God. That's as bad as make like a tree and leave, isn't it? From, what was that? Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Anyway, so mood is important. Now, a lot of the things about people's moods we can't control. You know, if you're like me and you wake up and have a bad day, no amount of, you know, a website trying to make me happy is going to help. In fact, it's probably going to irritate me more. Mm. But that said, our copy that we write on websites can influence people's moods. It can strike the right tone or it can undermine the tone. And so we really need to think carefully about the tone and voice on our websites. Mm. Now, that said, that's not an excuse for writing lots of verbose copy, because obviously the more copy you create, the more copy people have got to read, and therefore the more cognitive load you're creating that way, right? So that's why I think Headscape site is fine with this very minimalistic approach to it. But if it was going to have copy, it needed to think heavily about, you know, the choices of words it used and how it used things. Mm. Now, the most obvious example of adding some, you know, putting people in a good mood is to use a bit of humor on your website. And this is where I come and I defend some of the copy that we had on the old site. That actually, I do think it added a lightness to the site. It added an approachability and it added a friendliness. But that has to be used with care. For example, I don't necessarily think a 404 page when things have gone wrong is a particularly good time to start using humor. Although I seem to be in a minority thinking that every flipping 404 page on the planet always has some bad Star Wars pun on it. And it about this isn't the page you're looking for. But anyway, So we can use a bit of humour. Absolutely fine. Now, you might think, oh, we're too grown up in an organisation to use humour. We're too sensible. If the CIA's first tweet can be, we can neither confirm nor deny this is our Twitter channel, then you can use humour, right? The CIA can use humour, you can too. That said, it's not always appropriate. If, for example, you're running a funeral home, you might not want to use humour on your website. Might not be the best idea. But what you can use, if you're a funeral home, is empathy. And I think that is the key to putting people in a good mood. It's not about you using humour. It's not about having a particular tone of voice. It's about empathising with your audience and where they're currently at. And I think that's what actually the new Headscape site does well. It empathises with users. It knows they don't want to read a load of copy. They basically want some key information for their due diligence, and then they want to pick up the phone and talk to you.
Mm. Paul's asking in the chat room, being that copy light, will it give you SEO issues?
Yes, it will.
Don't know.
It will, but
because it's not like we've got no copy on the site. We've just removed stuff that was not providing anything useful.
Yeah, it will still create SEO issues for you, Marcus. But I would argue, well, I'll put two arguments on that. One is that if you blogged,
which we do,
then you would get SEO traffic from that.
And we do,
And also, I don't think that's not how people choose. You don't want leads from, I randomly Googled you, right?
Yeah, but you get one every 10 years that might turn into business.
Yeah, it's not the best way of winning business. It's the lowest quality leads I ever receive. You know, you want it from other ways. Yep. Anyway, but yes, he's got a good point. It does create issues. So all of this is to say that basically you need to use... Sorry, I'm now completely stopped trying to work out what Ben is talking about. No, don't get distracted. I'm lining up the microphone in front of the chat window again. So all of this is to basically say, empathize, have a voice and tone, think about your voice and tone. I'm amazed at how many organizations don't even consider that kind of thing. But of course, that's not the only way to make people feel more positively about your site. Make it beautiful, design it, give attention to that design.
Oh, yeah.
That's because of something called the halo effect, right? The halo effect is the reason why attractive people are listened to more, right? That is scientifically proven that attractive people are listened to more and they're trusted more. And it's because of the halo effect. We take one unrelated element and tie it to another unrelated element. If somebody is good looking, therefore they must be more trustworthy, right? The two don't correlate in any way whatsoever, but we believe they do in our heads, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same is true with the design. If somebody sees a gorgeous design, it feels easier to use. It's not necessarily any correlation between the two whatsoever, but it will feel like that. Right. And that's why, as well as making a design look gorgeous, you could introduce things like design delighters as well. Those little, oh, that's clever moments, because those, oh, that's clever moments puts people in a good mood. It has a positive impact on them.
Go to scroll to the footer on the new Headscape site.
Oh. Yeah. OK.
Rolled over the H.
You've just given away the
delighter.
Design delighter.
Yeah, to 27 people. Oh, no, there's more than that listening. Oh, well.
Yeah, you... they're supposed to discover those things for themselves, Marcus. Anyway. So, and then the other thing, when it comes to making things feel easier, another psychological thing is to make it feel fast. And that's another good thing that the Headscape site does now. It feels much snappier than the old one.
Oh, the old one was appalling. I was like, oh.
It was. It was really, really bad. So, yes, it's basically, if you make it fast, it makes an enormous difference. According to Bing, right? Why do you, when you say the words according to Bing, why does it immediately feel untrustworthy? I don't know why. It's because it's something about the word Bing, isn't it? Bing.
Bing, 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 bing.
But according to research done by Microsoft, that sounds better, doesn't it? A 2-second delay in load time, right, will have a 4.3% loss in revenue per visitor, a 3.75% reduction in clicks, and a 1.8 percent drop off in queries. So it has a big difference. Delays in load time make an enormous difference, and we need to take them seriously. So how do you make a website run faster? Well, that's a whole show in itself, but it includes things like, you know, reducing image size. Use a CDN to deliver your images. I use something called serve.com, S-I-R-V.com, in order to serve my images up much faster. Oh, now I understand why they picked the name they did. Sorry, it had never occurred to me that the name represents what they did. Anyway, so reduce your image size. If you use something like Serve, you can just throw a massive image at them and it will sort it all out for you. Limit the number of web fonts you use. Designers get carried away with their web fonts and that adds a lot to it. Optimize your CSS and JavaScript. And then use a content delivery network, something like Cloudflare, for example, which is another tool that I use. So, yeah, a little bit about how to make things feel easier. The performance one is probably the biggest of all of those. It makes enormous difference to how easy a site feels. But don't forget things like the halo effect as well. And just trying to put people in a good mood. All right. Think that about wraps up this show.
Yay.
Pretty much. What do you have a joke for us?
I do. I'm going to use one of the ones Paul put onto the Berg World Slack channel earlier on today. Paul Edwards.
This isn't me. This is Paul
Edwards.
Right. Okay.
Kat said that I had to read it out, so I'm going to read it out.
Okay.
I've got two, but we'll just do one of them. A lorry load of tortoises crashed into a train load of terrapins. What a turtle disaster.
Well, I have to say, from my as a son of a naturalist, that joke doesn't work because a turtle and a terrapin and a tortoise are completely different things.
No one cares.
It doesn't include both terrapins and tortoises. I'm sorry, jokes need to work.
It did work.
Okay. Well, just because a few idiots in the chat room laugh at it. They're only laughing out of politeness anyway. Anyway, so this, as you might have gathered now, and as I explained to somebody in the chat room just before we started recording, this entire season is basically one massive advert for my masterclass. So please go and buy it. It's totally overpriced. And there are better sources of information out there. But buy it anyway by going to boagworld.com/masterclass. See, reverse psychology there, Marcus. That's the kind of insightful thing you learn by doing my course.
If you did the course, you'd understand that much better, wouldn't you? Yeah. You'd be able to apply that to your actual work and everything.
Exactly. So, you know, it's profound. All right, I think that about wraps up for this week, doesn't
it? Yeah.
What are we doing next week? What's the score on next week? Why am I asking you?
Part
you don't
three
know.
Of the Headscape thought for the day.
About information architecture.
Yeah, I might try and think of something different, though, in between. Do an in-betweeny of some sort.
Just in order to drag it out even longer.
Well, no, just something completely different. We'll see.
Oh, I see. Other than talking about the Headscape site. Yeah. Ah.
Maybe.
We're also going to be talking about positioning your offering in a positive light. And the dangers of getting manipulative. So we're going to get into dark patterns.
How exciting.
And because it really gets on my nerves. Not dark patterns. That obviously gets on my nerves. But the thing that really gets on me, whenever you read an article about, you shouldn't do dark patterns, basically the argument boils down to, dark patterns, they're a bit naughty, aren't they? They're bad people use them. Or the word unethical comes up a lot. Right? Nobody ever thinks they're being unethical. Nobody ever... That's not an argument. You need to put forward a business argument about why dark patterns are not a good idea. Not just, you shouldn't do that. It's very naughty. So that's what I'm going to get into next week.
Okay. Good.
Right. That about wraps up this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. And join us again next week when the room will be well behaved. and much more respectful. Notice that we started off the show with 26 people listening. We end it with 15. Thank you very much. I think that says it all.
No, they have to
goodbye.
Go home to work. Or go home from work. Anyway, yes.
Bye. Bye. Buzzbrand.com.